When I was in the fifth grade, I remember what I think was my first creative writing assignment, or if not the first, at least the first that I can remember. You'll understand why in a minute. Write a short story. That was the assignment. That's it. For whatever reason, I know I struggled to come up with an idea, but allow me to quickly summarize what I did come up with. Right? I can remember this. This is fifth grade. Picture it. A young boy in a small Midwestern town. In case you don't know that about me, I'm originally from central Ohio in a small town. A young boy discovers an alien. Not the scary kind of cute, really. Hiding in his backyard. After an awkward initial encounter, they become friends. They understand each other. He brings the alien home to live in the basement. The boy tells his older sister about the alien, and they agree to keep it a secret. Being far from home, it doesn't take long before the alien gets sick. And on top of that, government officials who had been tracking the alien finally catch up to him. Sadly, the alien dies, and then miraculously comes back to life, resurrected, you might say. But in order to survive, ultimately, he has to get back to his home planet. After the alien rigs up a means to communicate with the home planet, the alien is rescued and does indeed return home. It's kind of a sad short story. Get this, I even included a drawing of the boy. Picture it with me. The boy riding his bike, with the alien sitting in a basket in the front of his bike, silhouetted in front of a giant full moon. Perhaps my short story from the fifth grade rings a bell. No? I clearly was not creative enough to come up with an original story. I'm not sure how I managed to cram all that action into a short story. That was the miracle. I also don't remember what I called it, but I was at least smart enough in fifth grade not to call it E.T. Whether it was my first creative writing assignment or not, again, I don't remember, but I do know that it was my first lesson in plagiarism. Needless to say, I did not grade well. It was embarrassing, which is no doubt why I remember it so well so many years later. The assignment was an invitation to use our imaginations, but my imagination did not take me far. In fact, it didn't take me anywhere. I couldn't get past my own knowledge or experience, including of a blockbuster movie that had come out the year or so before. I'm dating myself here. You know it, but there's a working definition. Here's a working definition of imagination. The faculty or action of forming new ideas or images or concepts of external objects not present to the senses. In other words, beyond reality as we know and experience it. As one child psychologist puts it, imagination draws on our experiences and knowledge of the world around us and combines them with the complete unknown to make something new. It allows us to explore beyond the constraints of our environment and our reality into a world of dreams, where creativity and invention are at their strongest. Sadly, constrained by my environment and my 10-year-old reality, I was not able to make something new, at least not that time. The good news, of course, the good news of Easter is that God is always, always making something new. Amen. Now picture the disciples. You heard the story, as Grace just read for us, the women among them, including, we're told, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and some others, are the first to arrive at the tomb where Jesus was buried. That's true in every gospel account. They find the stone rolled away, and when they go inside, they find no body, no witnesses to what's actually happened, which is also true in every gospel account. women are confused. Two angels, or at least divine representatives of some sort, suddenly appear in dazzling clothes. The women are now also terrified, understandably, and the angels ask them why they're looking for the living among the dead. The good question, perhaps, for all of us, why do you look for the living among the dead? They tell them that Jesus, the one, of course, that they are looking for, is not dead, but risen, risen, risen. Their minds and their hearts are blown. The women leave the empty tomb to tell the disciples, the now 11 men and some others. Judas, of course, the one among the original 12 who betrayed Jesus, is no longer in the picture. And here, this sexist trope: the men don't believe the women. The men don't believe the women. To the men, the words of the women were told seemed to them an idle tale. Another translation says it seemed to them like nonsense. And still another says they thought they were making it all up, make believe. Constrained by their biases and privilege and environment and experience and knowledge, reality as they knew it, Jesus' crucified body having been buried in a tomb, and all of them, all the disciples huddled together in fear of what would come next, the other disciples could not imagine something new. They were stuck being realistic. To believe that something new, that new life, say, that love, say, could emerge out of what to every sense looks and feels like death, requires some divine dreaming, some divine imagination. You are perhaps familiar with Conrad Cornelius Odell, noted student of the alphabet, he of Dr. Seuss fame. I know all the 26 letters like that. Through to Z is for zebra. I know them all well, said Conrad Cornelius Odell. So now I know everything anyone knows, from beginning to end, from the start to the close, because Z is as far as the alphabet goes. That's how the story begins. And if you know that short story, you know that young Conrad's mind is about to be blown when he learns that Z is not, in fact, the end of the alphabet. My alphabet starts where your alphabet ends, the narrator reveals. Then he almost fell flat on his face on the floor when I picked up the chalk and drew one letter more, a letter he never had dreamed of before. On beyond zebra, Conrad journeys through the rest of the story, the places I took him. I tried hard to tell young Conrad Cornelius Odell. There are things beyond Z that most people don't know. I took him past zebra as far as I could, and I think perhaps, maybe I did him some good. Because finally, he said, this is really great stuff, and I guess the old alphabet isn't enough. The good news of Jesus' resurrection, whatever actually happened, whatever you believe actually happened, is that love and life, new life, is possible even in the face of and even beyond what to our every sense looks and feels like the end. In our own lives and in the world around us, love and life get the last word, even in the face of and beyond cruelty, denial, betrayal, rejection, suffering, and even death. Where our fatigue or stress or trauma or fear or rage or despair or cynicism or indifference stifles our individual and collective imagination, leaving little or no possibility for love to grow and expand, for new and abundant life to emerge in ourselves, for each other, for the planet. God's imagination compels us further. The divine imagination compels us to seek and find love and life even where we least expect to find it. On beyond zebra, wherever and whenever our old alphabets aren't enough. It turns out the tomb is not the end of the story, just the beginning of another new chapter. You know that our Muslim siblings in faith are in the midst of their month-long celebration of Ramadan. And likewise, our Jewish siblings in faith are in the midst of their week-long Passover celebration. You may be familiar with the Passover tradition of singing Dayenu as part of retelling the story of the Exodus and God's liberation of the Hebrews from slavery in Egypt. Let my people go. Each of the 15 stanzas recalls a blessing from God during and after the Exodus up to the rebuilding of the temple, and each ends singing the Hebrew word Dayenu, enough for us, or it would have been enough. If God had brought us out from Egypt and had not carried out judgments against the Egyptians, Dayenu, it would have been enough. If God had carried out judgments against the Egyptians and not against their gods, it would have been enough. And so on it goes, at least one intention of the singing of the tradition being to inspire mindfulness and gratitude for the richness of any blessing from God, making even greater the appreciation for the entire arc of God's ongoing blessing and presence. The Passover tradition of singing Dayenu suggests it would have been enough. But there is a growing movement within Jewish tradition and now an organization called Dayenu, a specific call to climate action rooted in Jewish values, experience, and spirit that further expands on understandings of enough for us. We've had enough, and we also have enough, as in enough of what we need to repair and transform the world. It is an invitation to recreation of the world as we know it in all of its brokenness, limited only by our collective will to imagine and realize it. As Rabbi Michael Lerner has often said, the new world will be created by people who know better than to be realistic. Realism is crumbling all around us. We will learn what is possible by struggling for the world we desire, not settling for the world as we know it, for the oppressive and destructive and violent status quo, but working beyond the constraints of our environment and our reality into a world of dreams, toward a new world we imagine and desire together with God. As Albert Einstein once said, "I'm enough of an artist to draw freely on my imagination, which I think is more important than knowledge." Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world. In that spirit, within the Easter invitation to bear witness to the empty tomb and the relentless, ongoing possibility of resurrection, of new life, allow me to share this poetic invitation from Jewish psychotherapist and spiritual director, Dr. Barbara Brightman, shared this past week in preparation for the Passover. She writes, "We praise God at Passover, Dayenu, it would have been enough. It would have been enough if you had taken us out of Egypt but not divided the Reed Sea. If you had divided the Reed Sea but not brought us to dry land. If you had satisfied our needs for 40 years but did not send us manna. If you fed us manna in the desert but did not bring us to Mount Sinai, it would have been enough. We would have been content. This year I am falling. I cannot say Dayenu. It is too much. It is not enough. I've had enough. Enough racism, enough war, enough vicious white men taunting the brilliant judge, first black woman Supreme Court justice, taunting her to ignite rage, call her just another angry black radical. Enough bodies, dead bodies strewn on city streets, enough maimed bodies run over by tanks, enough stockpiles of nuclear weapons, enough chemical weapons, enough weapons altogether. Weapons incinerating the earth, billowing carbon into the stratosphere, melting glaciers even faster. Enough sadism, enough hedonism of the super rich, enough billionaires riding rockets to outer space while their workers cannot feed their children on the earth. Enough senators blocking climate change legislation because they own stock in fossil fuel, because they own coal mines, because money and power are their gods. Enough plastic bottles and bags gagging fish in the sea, suffocating birds in the air, enough floods and fires, enough earthquakes and droughts, enough melting ice caps, enough dead birds, dead gorillas, dead frogs, enough extinctions, enough desert where there should be rain, enough rain where there should be sun, enough searing the lungs of the earth, enough climate refugees dying at borders to be free. Enough torture and tanks, enough severed limbs, pregnant women shuddering in basements giving birth, hearing bombs fall on their homes, enough women watching kneeling husbands shot in the head, enough atrocities, enough rape, enough liars and thieves and autocrats and oligarchs. Enough, enough, enough. Will you shout with me from rooftops, from mountaintops, from every capital and every dome, from every church, every mosque, every temple, every home? Can we make a loud roar loud enough to reach the heavens so it will finally be enough? Please take my hand, she writes. Please whisper in my ear that you have had enough too. Friends, we remember the revolutionary Jesus who was killed, crucified by the Roman state because he practiced revolutionary love and inspired divine imagination among the people, especially among those the world and its oppressive systems left behind. Because, right, oppressive religious and political and economic systems then and now depend on stifling our shared imagination, on ensuring our resignation to the status quo, to the way things are, being as good as they are ever gonna get. And we remember and we celebrate at Easter the Jesus whose imagination, whose love and life could not be stifled, could not be killed, could not be buried, whose divine imagination, whose extraordinary love, whose resurrected life and presence calls us still 2,000 plus years later to love and life resurrected, made ever new. To new and renewed worlds beyond the realities we know all too well, beyond the crosses on which we continue to crucify ourselves and each other and the planet, beyond the tombs in which we continue to bury ourselves, each other, and the planet. On beyond zebra, as far as our individual and collective imaginations will take us. Mary Oliver concludes the first section of her poem, Evidence, with the following line. Keep some room in your heart for the unimaginable. Friends, keep some room in your hearts always for the unimaginable, for the unrealistic, for the impossible. And may it be so for ourselves, for each other, and for the planet. May it be so.